Coming up on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast.
And I said, well, did you take maternity leave? She goes, no, it's not offered. I went, oh my goodness gracious. Well, we need to fix that.
We speak with Senator Missy Irvin about maternity leave for state employees and other policy efforts to support Arkansas moms. Then I'll sit down with Dr. Shannon Case from Johnson Regional Medical Center to discuss the value of breastfeeding.
When we talk about what things do we have to do to not only encourage people to breastfeed, but to keep people breastfeeding, there's this broader topic of social determinants of health.
And Casey Cochran with the Arkansas Department of Health will join us to discuss breastfeeding resources and other supports available across the state.
We have breastfeeding peer counselors in some of our local health units, certified lactation consultants. We also have breastfeeding networks and a breastfeeding hotline.
Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, a series where we explore the data and issues behind maternal and infant health in Arkansas. I'm your host, Sandra McGrew. I'm the executive director at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, also known as ACHI. We are an independent health policy center focused on evidence-based research, analysis, and collaborative efforts to improve the health of all Arkansans. We pulled our analysts and researchers together to envision what a healthy birthing journey can look like and identify points along the way where our state has opportunities to make lasting improvements for our moms, children, families, and communities. We identified 9 phases along the birthing journey from pre-pregnancy through delivery and into the postpartum period. In this episode, we explore the 5th phase, family support and bonding. Family support, such as parental leave, childcare assistance, breastfeeding counseling, and safety education, help a new mom as she adjusts to postpartum changes and bonds with her new child. We begin with a look at state policies to support moms during this very important time. One of the leaders behind these policies is Senator Missy Irvin. When she took office in 2010, Senator Irvin was the youngest woman ever elected to the Arkansas Senate. She represents Senate District 24, including Searcy, Stone, and Van Buren counties, as well as parts of Cleburne, Faulkner, and Newton counties. Senator Irvin chairs the Senate Public Health, Welfare, and Labor Committee and serves as a member of the Senate Insurance and Commerce Committee and Joint Budget Committee, among others. She's a graduate of Randolph-Macon Women's College in Lynchburg, Virginia. Senator, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so fun to be with you guys and just talk about policy.
You have obviously been very engaged on maternal health, and you were a co-sponsor for Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies. And throughout this series, we have highlighted several of the provisions from that legislation, including the presumptive eligibility, the unbundling of the Medicaid payments, required depression screenings, and so much more. Could you give us just a peek behind the curtain and tell us how all of this came together?
I think for Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act, really was a combination of so many different ideas that people have had throughout the years, but also it was in reflection of what we were seeing and experiencing, which was a rise in bad outcomes, you know, poor maternal outcomes for both babies and for moms, you know, a higher death rate, mm-hmm. unfortunately, comorbidities that existed that we've identified, but comorbidities that could be early diagnosed and treatable to prevent a bad outcome postpartum, particularly, or prenatal. And so I think it's just doing what any good scientist would do. You look at what's happening, you look at the data, you look at the circumstances that these women were facing and what they were experiencing and how we could be avoiding those situations. And so we really did a deep dive into looking at those incidences and the circumstances where we were losing moms, losing babies, having really significant health issues, and then really digging down to see, were they preventable? And a lot of times they were. They were very preventable. And so then that led down the policy discussion about, okay, if we see this and we know that these are preventable issues and preventable outcomes, and we can, where can we act quickly and where can we act in policy to make the improvements to catch those things early on and to prevent a bad outcome? I mean, it was really that simple. But I think it was complicated because we started then saying, okay, well, what's working? What are the good ideas? And then you also just have to put yourself back into that position of that expecting mom. Mm-hmm. What level of support do they need? What are they experiencing in their daily lives? You know, who is around them? What's their support group look like? What's their job situation, their home situation, their community situation? And then what's their access issue? You know, we have major, major access issues to prenatal care and maternal care in Arkansas because of our rural state. And sadly, you know, majority of our babies are born on Medicaid, which is your lowest payer. And so providers for those services are fewer and far between, which said we've got to pay more. We've got to pay providers and doctors and hospitals more money to deliver these babies. We've got to stabilize a really not an ideal situation that we have right now on the ground. We've got to stabilize and make sure no more maternal units close. And we've got to increase that pay to increase that access for these women, for these doctors. And so that was a huge component of that. And then unbundling that payment for me was so critical because we just didn't have the data. We didn't know. We weren't tracking prenatal visits. We weren't tracking, you know, what's happening and how many times they're going to the doctor. And then we also backed that up and said, you need to start as soon as you find out you're pregnant. Go see the doctor. And when we started to look at the payments of both third-party payers, Medicaid, it was not encouraged. I thought, well, this is crazy. We've got to increase visits. Increase the amount of visits that women can access prenatal care and postpartum care. We got to increase those, and we got to increase the payment for those. Mm-hmm. If you really want to drive behavior, you got to pay for it. And so that was a huge component of that. And so then also behind the scenes was the different people of the different communities that were coming forward to say, hey, we've got a solution. What about us? What about using doulas? What about using making sure that their presumptive eligibility? Huge. You know, we know that these women are going to have a baby. We know that if they're pregnant and they're not on Medicaid, get them covered immediately. And it's not rocket science. We're going to have a baby. So let's get them to the right payer source that we can, particularly in the Medicaid program, as quickly as we can. Mm-hmm. There were just a lot of moving parts, a lot of good ideas, a lot of research from a lot of people, and then just realizing our situation on the ground with the rural nature of our state, mm-hmm. and how we're going to tackle that.
And you talked about the different perspectives, and I think that's an important piece to bring up, too, because there were several stakeholder mm-hmm. meetings that were held as all of this was coming together.
Yes.
And can you talk to us just a little bit about that and the importance of having all of these different perspectives at the table? Because this is really a complicated issue, and we are a rural state. How did this help? Because it really was, it harkened back to just that grassroots mm-hmm. effort.
Yep. Very grassroots effort. Very grassroots effort. But also, I just have to give a shout out to Olivia Walton and to Christy Turlington, the film that she made, and then how that was sponsored and brought to Arkansas, and how the discussions just continued. And they did such a great job and played a big vital role, in my opinion, of really just, let's talk about this. We need to talk about this. We need to highlight this. We need to draw some attention to this. And the different scenarios that were highlighted in the film, I think, were great. They gave such a good perspective of just really women in Arkansas that are expecting babies in their different situations. It was very broad, and I really loved the way that kind of highlighted those stories and talked about them, but just really presented them. Didn't give an angle, just presented them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that led to a lot of discussions. And I really just value, obviously, our hospitals and our The folks that work in the hospital associations, they were very, very helpful, just getting us the information we needed to say this is what's going to work mm-hmm. and this is what we need. Hospital administrators, the hospital association, your local doctors, family practice doctors that said, hey, we're a workforce. I mean, and part of the unbundling for me is still the idea that we have not attained yet, but a team approach to allow family practice provider, physician, or it could be your nurse practitioner, provide you with your prenatal care, and then you're delivering OB-GYN could be farther away mm-hmm. because normally they are. And so that access issue, it's just really a time issue. Mm-hmm. If I have to take 2 hours off to go drive somewhere one way, I have to take a whole day off of work, I may not be able to afford to do that. But if I've got somebody right there locally that I can go to for my prenatal care, then I need to be able to do that. And we need to be able to provide for that mm-hmm. and create that kind of team approach as it relates to family practice providers being able to provide prenatal care in conjunction with an OB-GYN who then can deliver that baby, or encourage more family practice doctors to become delivering physicians. My husband delivered three of my four, and he's a family practice physician. And so that goes to the whole discussion of making sure that our residency education is equipped to provide for family practice doctors being that critical workforce mm-hmm. to deliver babies, and what are the barriers there, and how we need to get them moved to that direction. How do we incentivize a family practice physician to now start delivering babies for that community? So those are still questions that I think we need to be hammered out.
You have, for a long time, you have been an advocate for paid leave. And one key piece of legislation that you've led on extended paid maternity leave for state employees, including school teachers, public school teachers, to 12 weeks. Why was this important?
Oh, such a fun story. So I was at Public Health Committee, and this beautiful woman who worked for the Bureau of Legislative Research as our analyst for our committee had the most beautiful baby and just kind of told me her story. And I just fell in love with her story and this child. And I thought, well, that led to the conversation about maternity leave. And I said, well, did you take maternity leave? She goes, no, it's not offered. I went, oh my goodness gracious. Well, we need to fix that. And so I worked with Governor Hutchinson to pass the legislation for paid maternity leave. The coolest thing about that bill for me was the idea that we used catastrophic fund for it. And when we started to do the math and we ran the numbers, we saw that there was this huge balance in the catastrophic fund leave that has not been used or tapped or utilized or anything. And so I thought, this is cool. We can categorize that. Then wait, we can tap into that funding that's already there and existing, and it's paid for. There's no fiscal impact to this. And people were donating their time. Robert Breck was a good friend of mine and at the time was the attorney for the health department. And we were talking about this and kind of dreaming about it. And he's just a great policy person, too, and a good friend that I have made all these years. And he said, you know, I have all this time that I've accumulated, but I never take off. He's like, it'd be great if I could donate that time off, my time off, mm-hmm. if I could donate it to my coworker who's expecting a baby. I thought, that's brilliant. So that's what we did. So that was really a cool feature for the state employees piece that we passed originally. But to me, it's really, really important that if you have the time, you've got to have that time for that mom and that baby to bond and to be there mm-hmm. And be home. And it's not just for the bonding of the mother and the child. That mama needs time for her body to recover. I don't know what world we live in that we think that you can have a baby and then, boom, you can go off and run a marathon the next day. No, that's just unrealistic. But for some reason, we're just not very good at standing up for ourselves, I guess, as women, advocating for ourselves And your bodies go through a very traumatic experience, whether you have your baby by C-section or vaginally. You've got to have time for your body to recover. But it's not just your body that's got to recover now. It's also your mind. Mm-hmm. Your emotional well-being needs to recover, which is, again, back to the depression screenings, was a huge part of the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act, because you got to be a healthy mom to take care of your baby. If you want a healthy baby, got to have a healthy mom. And so there are so many emotions that go through your system when you have a baby. It's beautiful, glorious, wonderful, but it's also like, oh my gosh, you know,
it's hard. Mm-hmm.
It's hard because you're now, where do you fit in?
Right.
You know, and so, and you've got a lot of demands on you as a mom, no matter what your circumstances. So I felt like it was really, really a critical thing, but it's also, we should lead as a state, as mm-hmm. an employer, to say, hey, this is a good idea. Follow our lead. If we're going to ask businesses to do it, we should be doing it ourselves.
And speaking of businesses, what are you seeing in the private sector following this legislation? Have you seen any movement there?
I have. And I think that they're seeing the value of that, especially in retaining their employees. Mm. If you want to retain, you've already invested a ton of money into training them or and having them be expertise, you know, growing in expertise in your company is so valuable. And so to being able to retain that employee by saying, you know, we're going to work with you. We're going to recognize your circumstances in life. We're going to be partners with you in that. We're going to recognize that this is a really important time for you and your child and your, you know, your situation that you have, whether it's a spouse or your best friend that you're raising this baby with, which is one of the cases that I had experienced. And so why not? And I think it's smart, but it's also right. I mean, it's just the right thing to do, really. It is just the right thing to do. We need that time as human beings to be with each other and to grow our family. Family is absolutely the most important thing. I'm a believer in God. God created family. And family's got to be valued and prioritized, and it's got to be, we've got to reflect that in our policy. We've got to reflect that in the way that we treat our state employees, our teachers, everybody. And so you got to lead by example, and I think that's one of the most critical things. And it was so exciting on the first maternity leave bill, I have to tell you the story. I had gotten it through the Senate and into the House. You want to talk about some backdoor...
We want to peek behind the curtain.
I found out there was this young lady that was expecting a baby. We made it through the Senate. We were in the House. I found out her due date. I pulled that bill back to the Senate to put an emergency clause on it so that it would go into effect the minute the governor signed it so she could take maternity leave with her baby. That was the coolest thing ever. You want to talk about the real need for an emergency mm-hmm. clause. That was one of it. And it was so cool. And we waited and we had a bill signing. But then we kind of waited and did a celebration. She brought her baby and it was our first state baby. It was so cool. But that was just kind of one of those fun legislative hoops that you have to jump through sometimes, but very, very specific, that made such a huge impact on this person's life. And those are really the most rewarding times when it comes to legislation.
We tend to talk a lot about the challenges, and they're real challenges that we do have here, and they're focused on for a reason. But there are a lot of opportunities, too. And obviously, Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies has a lot of great provisions. What other opportunities do you see that the state legislature could do to help improve outcomes in the state?
Oh, I really, really hope that we can do a better job at birth control, providing, you know, LARCs. I'm a big fan of utilizing long-acting reversible contraception, getting that out there more for women. I think that's really, really important. And I think that we need to have a more focused, intentional effort there. Because part of the comorbidities that we saw was you've got to be a healthy person before you can have a baby, because you just complicate it. If you're unhealthy and then you get pregnant, then you're going to have an unhealthy, unsuccessful pregnancy and potentially a really, really bad outcome. So we've got to get women healthy. We've got to talk about this more. You should be taking prenatal vitamins. Who teaches you that? My mom? Who taught me how to take care of myself? I mean, at best, it's our moms. But sometimes we just didn't have those conversations. And so we've got to do a better job of saying, okay, you need to start taking prenatal vitamins. This is why folic acid is important for you in the first trimester because of brainstem development. We need to let them be armed with all the tools that they need and education. We've got to stress that you've got to be a healthy person before you get pregnant. Mm-hmm. We need to do a much better job there because you got to be healthy before you become a mom. That's really an area that we've just got to concentrate more on and prioritizing those kinds of things and encouraging younger women to get to a gynecologist or to a family practice doctor and really have those conversations about what do I need to do now. Even at the ages of 16, 17, 18, these are some of our bad outcomes. Well, we got to talk about this. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to talk about how you can be a better, more healthier, successful person, especially if you have a baby. And, you know, what are the effects of drinking? What are the effects of smoking? What are the effects of doing drugs? We've got to really just talk about those things, but do a better job of aligning some policy, I think, to encourage more opportunities for you to become a healthier person. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of work there, for sure.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Senator Ervin.
Thank you for having me. It's really been fun.
A lot of the maternity leave policies at the state level that we discussed with Senator Ervin apply only to state employees. That said, companies in the private sector are also reviewing their parental leave policies as part of a broader benefits package. One company that has decided to provide paid parental leave for its employees is Arvest Bank. To learn more about what motivated that move, I sat down with Arvest Bank's senior benefits analyst, Mary Kate Moore. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Moore. What led to Arvest Bank's decision to offer parental leave, and what do you offer to employees?
The decision to offer parental leave came ultimately from recognizing that major life moments, like welcoming a child, have huge impact on associates and their families. We realized that parental leave was an area where we could make a really meaningful investment in our people. And supporting associates in this way helps them focus on their family without the additional stress or burden of financial uncertainty. Our program offers 12 weeks of paid parental leave for both birthing and non-birthing parents who welcome a child, and it's paid at 100% of their salary. Ultimately, our goal isn't just compliance, which is, of course, important, but we want to make leave accessible and usable for our associates. So when you look at something like the FMLA, the FMLA does ensure that associates have job protection, but I think it was created at a time when maybe there was only one breadwinner in the house, or they were working part-time and full-time. And because it's unpaid, it's not always feasible for families to take that full leave. So our ultimate goal is simple: make sure they feel supported during this time of their lives.
And we know that that time of life is so key for the parents and the child. Have you heard any direct feedback on the program from your employees? And if so, what has some of that feedback been?
Yeah, the feedback we have received has been largely very positive. Associates feel like they don't have to choose between their career and their family at home, and they feel like they're able to be present during a critical time with their family. If anything, I really think it's created a sense of trust and loyalty between the associate and Arvest.
That kind of dovetails into my next question here was going to be to talk about the importance of the well-being of your employees. Obviously, as you know, people and parents, new parents. But can you also talk about the impact that it has on the culture of the organization?
Yes. Our culture is bettered. Our associates feel like they have the energy and the drive to perform for Arvest, to really show up together. We have a lot of tenured associates here at Arvest, and I think it's because we show up for each other. People remember how their employer shows up for them during those big moments in life, and that builds a lot of loyalty for an organization.
Many organizations, both public and private, of course, want to do the right thing, you know, do right by their employees. But this is one of those situations where the reality is it does come at a cost. What would you tell other companies in the private sector trying to balance the cost of a benefit like this, but, you know, obviously also making sure it's in line with their goals?
That's a great question. I feel like a lot of times organizations are focusing heavily on the cost of the leave itself. But what I think maybe gets overlooked is the cost of losing those associates. They're losing those experienced employees at a moment when they're already navigating something life-changing, or you risk having them come back with less fervor, less drive to perform for the organization because they only got 2 weeks off. So I think retention and maintaining that engagement during those transitions is where programs like this really deliver a lot of value.
Have you seen programs like this differentiate you from other organizations when you're trying to attract employees? You kind of talked about the employee retention and engagement, but have you seen an impact from the program in terms of engagement and employee retention?
Definitely. I think a strong leave program is one of the first benefits that job seekers are looking into these days. People want to be supported by their employers, and it's not enough to just be a paycheck anymore. Benefits in this space really demonstrate that Arvest specifically understands the modern workforce needs. It's something that we hear in interviews asking about it. Like, it is definitely a make or break situation where someone will not move to an organization that doesn't offer parental leave.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Mary Kate Moore is a senior benefits analyst at Arvest Bank. Up next, we'll explore the benefits of breastfeeding. To learn more about the value of breastfeeding and the barriers some moms encounter, I'm joined by Dr. Shannon Case, an OBGYN at Johnson Regional Medical Center in Clarksville, Arkansas. Dr. Case also serves on the advisory board for the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS, where she represents rural OBGYNs. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Dr. Case.
Thanks
for
having me.
Okay, we've been talking about the role of mother-infant bonding and efforts to support that process, both in and outside of the hospital. One of the first major steps in that process takes place right after delivery with the initiation of breastfeeding. I remember this well after I gave birth. Could you share with us, though, and with our listeners, why that moment is so important and how to try to help facilitate that in the delivery room?
Sure. So There's actually a name for that. It's called the golden hour, or we've affectionately started calling it the golden hour. And so what that is within the first 1 hour, but even up to 2 or more hours immediately after the delivery, you want to facilitate not only maternal infant bonding, but direct skin to skin placement of the baby on the mom's chest to facilitate a few things. So the first thing that it does is it helps calm the baby, it helps regulate their temperature, and it initiates from the maternal side, the mom actually begins to secrete oxytocin. So most of us know about that in the labor setting, but from the breastfeeding setting, it tells your brain to secrete the hormone that tells your uterus to start contracting, so it decreases your bleeding, but also that very first signal that breastfeeding is on the way. And so it does all of those things. And so essentially what that is in the first hour, not only do we want the baby skin to skin as much as possible, but you really don't want a lot of distraction entering into the room. So we actually have signs throughout our labor and delivery to try to educate families as well that we observe the golden hour, which is no new family members or even employees that were not in the room participating in the delivery, incorporating themselves into the room to disturb the family in that first hour. Now, obviously, patients can change that if they want to, sure. but we try to offer everyone at least that initial 60 minutes uninterrupted and kind of protect that time so that they can feel comfortable to be exposed right. if they want to be exposed mm-hmm. and, you know, all of the things that kind of go along with that.
Yeah. I mean, after that time, it's just there's so much craziness, but also just how you're describing it. I mean, our bodies are so amazing, you know, wow.
They really are.
Talk to me a little bit about how do you approach the discussion of breastfeeding with your pregnant patients?
So that's a little bit harder. So around mid-pregnancy, so, you know, you have that visit where you're going to like do your sugar test. So everyone's in the office for a little bit longer. So I've kind of tried to make that kind of the milestone visit where I say, let's talk about your birth plan. And then, are you going to breastfeed? Mm-hmm. And once they say, you know, yes, we are, or no, we're not, then that kind of opens the discussion. That's when we lead into, do you have a breast pump? Do you know how to get a breast pump? Mm-hmm. Answer any questions they have, go over what resources we have for breastfeeding support, those type things.
What is just a typical sort of like a rundown of what you do talk to those patients about if they do decide that they want to breastfeed?
So the first thing that I try to do is a little bit of education about what do you know? What have you heard? What are your mm-hmm. concerns? Because what I've experienced over my years of being in practice is we assume that patients know a whole lot more than they actually
right. mm-hmm.
know. And even patients that I know are preparing for breastfeeding, when I start asking direct questions, they frequently don't know. So yeah. I think the biggest thing that I've witnessed is even people who really want to breastfeed, then immediately postpartum, they start to panic because it's, I don't have any milk. My baby's starving. Because no one thought to tell them, you're not going to have what you consider to be milk in the first 3 to 5 days. It takes 3 days. So we talk about expectations. Right. So it's babies come out not knowing how to breastfeed. You don't know how to breastfeed. There's a learning curve there. Yeah. And then once we establish, okay, this is how we're going to help you get over the learning curve, I talk briefly about the expectation of you're only going to have colostrum. Mm-hmm. That's really hard to see when the baby's feeding. Don't let it give you anxiety that your baby's starving to death. We're going to help you through that. So I think it's education, starting the conversation. And then the other piece that I bring into it, again, anecdotally from my own experience, is let's kind of educate your family as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because moms and grandmothers and everyone else in the room also has an expectation for how things should go. And frequently it's just give that baby a little bit of formula right. because it's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing it good enough. The baby's not latching enough. Like, and then that provokes not only this sense of failure in the mom, but also then just this pressure of,
absolutely.
I'm not feeding my baby.
Right.
And then
I'm doing it the wrong way.
I'm doing it the wrong way. My baby's hungry. Mm-hmm. It's fussy. So I think not only educating the patient, but anyone who's going to be involved in the delivery is really helpful too.
And also just for the mom to feel that support too from other family members.
Right.
And I love how you're talking about you're really meeting your patients where they are. How much do they know? But, you know, I will just say from my personal experience too, and I felt like, okay, I know what I'm doing when, mm-hmm. you know, and there's so much on your mind. And those are the little things that are really, really important.
Right.
You know, everyone's different. Right. There's a lot of generational differences. We know a lot more mm-hmm. than like our moms knew. You
exactly.
know?
It's funny. I actually was having a conversation with our lactation consultant about this today before I came, and we were talking about generational gaps mm-hmm. in breastfeeding education. And she was saying how her mother breastfed all of her siblings. And so she got to witness three babies being breastfed. It never occurred to her that anyone did anything else.
Right.
I was the opposite. My mom did not breastfeed. So I didn't really have any exposure to that. And truly, even in an OBGYN's medical training, we have limited exposure to actually what the lactation consultants do and how they educate the patient. We kind of leave that to the lactation consultants. I think people assume that we have a lot of tools that we don't have. Definitely. Even as a patient, when I had my son, I knew nothing about breastfeeding, and he wasn't a good natural breastfeeder. And I had zero idea of how to approach that. And no one really told me, but I think because everyone assumed I was a physician that I knew what to do. So I think it brings up a lot of good points about education.
Yeah.
You know, what do we need to do to help support patients, and how do we get education out there?
And also knowing, you know, it isn't always as easy or straightforward for some moms and their infants. You know, my daughter, same thing. We really had trouble, you know, those first like couple of weeks. What are some of those like common challenges that you've encountered with patients? And, you know, it sounds like the lactation consultants provide a lot of support, but as a physician, how do you support these moms when, you know, you come to check on them after delivery?
So I'm in a unique situation because I'm at a rural hospital and we take care of a very low socioeconomic group of patients. So we actually take care of, in our OB department, about 47% of our population is Medicaid, and it can be as high as 60%. So our challenges are kind of unique because although insurance companies pay for breast pumps, with Medicaid, you have to be established with breastfeeding to obtain a pump, and then you have to go to your first WIC appointment to get that. And then they provide you education. So for us, it's challenging because we have a couple of resources. So like Baptist Health, we'll do telehealth lactation appointments. Only recently, literally in the last month, did our hospital obtain a certified lactation consultant. So we actually struggled. Our nurses all do a great job, but there's a difference between a lactation certification and just nurses that have experience. And so I think getting the resources to the patients has been a big hurdle. But what we want to do and what we try to do is at their very first prenatal visit, we have a packet of education that we go over. And included in that is the Baptist Health breastfeeding line because they will do pre-delivery education visits. There's also a prescription for a breast pump in there. And we go over that, like how to get your breast pump. And then we give them a list of some resources that I've just found on YouTube and different places to like that I've think are reputable to say, these are the educational things that we have to offer for you.
Are there topics related to breastfeeding that you find women are sometimes less familiar with, like the role of good nutrition for the mom itself?
I do. I think most women kind of know about the caffeine, you know, that I feel like when we start to talk about nutrition and breastfeeding, caffeine's always the first thing that everyone says, like, oh, I know I can't drink my coffee. I'm like, well, similar to being pregnant, you can have some, you know, you just can't have as much as maybe you're used to having. But I think, yes, I think patients are unaware of how many calories they need to take in to produce, you know, breast milk effectively. I think people are unaware that sleep is a big deal. And for new moms particularly, that's
so
a
hard.
Really hard thing.
So hard.
And for lower socioeconomic women, it's a hard thing because many of our patients are under the age of 21. They don't have stable partners in the home. They don't have stable extended family support in the home. So they're just trying to get by. And so when we talk about like social determinants of health and how that impacts healthcare, it significantly impacts breastfeeding, not only initiating breastfeeding, but sticking with breastfeeding because breastfeeding is really hard, you know, and it does take a lot of support. So I think when we talk about what things do we have to do to not only encourage people to breastfeed, but to keep people breastfeeding, there's this broader topic of social determinants of health that significantly impacts the postpartum time. So we can bring them what they need in the hospital, mm-hmm. but continuing with that once we leave the hospital is much more challenging.
And throughout this podcast series, we talk about those social determinants of health with various leaders like yourself. When you're looking broadly just at the entire birthing journey and all the energy that we currently have, you know, focused on improving maternal and infant health in our state right now, is there something that you feel that the broader community should know or might want to focus on to better support Arkansas moms and our families?
I think there are a lot of things. There's so many things.
That's probably, we should just have our own
such a
podcast
about that. That's a big, big question. But since we're talking about breastfeeding, let's start there. So many of our moms are going back to work. And I hear all the time, particularly in factory workers and people that are not in a professional setting where they have control over their schedule, line workers, factory workers, people working in retail, you know, where they have very stringent work hours and shift and they get 2 15-minute breaks. And I think it's important to make breastfeeding women feel like that time is protected and that it's supported. I think that's difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, I even see that in the hospital setting, you know, even with our nursing staff, where even though we support them and that and we want them to do those things, when you're on a busy labor and delivery unit, it's hard to find 30 minutes to go sit in a room and pump. You know, so I don't have an answer for how we fix that. But I do think it is a glaring issue as to one of the reasons why people either do not initiate breastfeeding. So I've actually had patients tell me, well, I'm not going to breastfeed because I have to go back to work and that's just going to be too hard and I'm only going to get to pump once a day and that's just not enough. And so I think it's easy to push that aside because they don't want to have to deal with the social aspects of going back to work, explaining that to their employer, maybe even being looked at as getting special treatment by their colleagues, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So
when you talked about the 30 minutes, it made me realize that is something that a lot of you just don't know, mm-hmm. that it takes a long time.
It takes a long time.
You know, mm-hmm. and I think that's something also mm-hmm. that, you know, patients probably don't realize at first if
right.
they've never done it before.
I will say in that arena, though, there has been some newer technology come out that I do think is really helpful. So like when I had my son, the wearable breast pumps that you can kind of pump all day were not around.
Yes.
So the invention of that, mm-hmm. I will say, has made things much better. But I think making those accessible to patients.
Right,
so
right.
when insurance companies choose the pumps, so they do get to choose what pumps they provide, frequently it's not the hands-free. And I do think that makes a big difference because you can just wear them all the time. And you need a little less time to have to
right.
carve out of your day
That's
to do that because you
yeah.
can kind of do it continuously throughout the day. So the type of pump really does matter. Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to share that I have not asked you today?
So one thing that I learned was the true difference between breast milk and formula. So a lot of us kind of feel like we know, like, well, there are some vitamins or minerals or things. So when I was reading, breast milk was described as a living thing, and that had never ever occurred to me, that breast milk is a living thing. So it's full, yes, of vitamins and all the things that the mother ingests, but it's full of really important things from the mother's immune system. So white blood cells, antibodies, of course, to help the baby fight off infection, prebiotics for the baby's gut health. So there are so many things in breast milk that are living things, part of mom's immunity, that are functionally different from formula. And over the course of a single feed, the breast milk changes dynamically throughout that feed.
Really?
So it starts out lower in fat, higher in protein, and over the course of one feed, the fat content increases. it's not only unique to a single feed, but like if you have a baby that's a faster breastfeeder, your body adapts and changes the milk more quickly. If you're breastfeeding twins and one twin feeds differently than the other twin, your breast will adapt to that. So while formula is a great product and I'm glad we have it, and no one is shaming anyone for formula feeding, fed is best. Mm-hmm. We all believe that. I do think it's just interesting to fundamentally know the difference. Right. So formula is fortified with vitamin D and vitamin K. Breast milk is not. It's a little bit harder for those vitamins because they're fat soluble to get into the breast milk. Formula is also fortified with iron. And although breast milk has an iron content that is lower, it's more bioavailable to the baby. So it's a lower content, but they use it more efficiently.
Just another amazing fact about our bodies.
Right.
Okay, we're doing great things, women.
Right.
thank you so much for coming down and for speaking with us today. Yeah. It was really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dr. Kay sees patients at Johnson Regional Medical Center in Clarksville. She completed her medical education at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. In our conversation with Dr. Case, she described a range of resources she provides to her patients following delivery. But a lot of additional resources are also available to moms in every county through their local health unit. For more information on those resources, I sat down with Casey Cochran, Deputy Director for Public Health Programs at the Arkansas Department of Health. Thank you so much for coming back on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast with us, Mrs. Cochran. There is a lot of information about the benefits of breastfeeding in the maternal health space, but from the perspective of a state agency at the Department of Health, why is it important for the Department of Health to be involved? And how are you guys engaged?
So we are very involved and we do support breastfeeding. Breastfeeding is best for mom and baby. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole level of education and support around breastfeeding at the Arkansas Department of Health. We have breastfeeding peer counselors in some of our local health units, certified lactation consultants. So if mom is having problems, she can reach out to the local health unit for assistance, or I'm struggling, I need some help, one-on-one support. We also have breastfeeding networks and support groups that moms can join, and a breastfeeding hotline. So sometimes when you're breastfeeding as a mom, you just have those, you know, questions that come to your mind about, I don't feel very well, I went to the doctor, I received this medication, should I take this, should I not? That breastfeeding hotline can offer assistance with breastfeeding, connect you to someone if you need that one-on-one support or assistance with latching or anything like that. But also, there's a nurse available to talk through health questions. If you have a medication question or you have even a baby question, mm-hmm. about, you know, my baby or, you know, is having these symptoms or these issues. So the breastfeeding hotline is available and it's manned 24 hours a day. You can call. Right. So a lot of people don't take advantage of that, but it is a service offered through the Department of Health that we partner with to have those nurses available and that support.
We know that food insecurity and related issues can become barriers for some moms trying to breastfeed and care for infants. But here in our state, we have the Women, Infants, and Children program, also known as WIC. Talk to me, what is this program? How does it work?
So exciting. WIC is undergoing some changes. I don't know if you've heard about our recent upgrades and updates, is what I like to call it, that will be happening over this summer in 2026. We are starting to train on a new upgraded platform. We are going online with WIC. So the cards that you use at your WIC vendor for your food and cash value benefits that you get with WIC, mm-hmm. will go to an online system, meaning now you come in to get your card loaded with your benefits and you get a list of the benefits that are loaded onto your card. So that can be done remotely in the new platform. We'll also have some remote WIC service available options, which is a little different because typically it meant a visit to your local health unit. There are still, you know, because it is a nutritional-based program, there are still some medical checks that take place with mom and baby. There's different packages depending on if you're breastfeeding or if you are partial breastfeeding. There's food packages, nutritional supplements in those food packages that really cater to what you're trying to achieve, your own personal goal. That's a little bit different. All of this information will start rolling out so we can get ready for a launch of this new platform.
Are there dedicated women, infants, and children clinics? There used to be, right? But now they're part of the local health units?
Yes. We used to have standalone WIC-only clinics is what we called them. Now those are rolled into our local health units. So all locations of our local health units offer WIC services. Not all locations have a breastfeeding peer counselor, but that hotline is available to every WIC participant regardless of their location in the state. But we do offer WIC services in all 92 locations.
And how large is the program here in Arkansas? How does it compare to other states?
In Arkansas, we have over 60,000 participants on WIC. The other part to WIC that a lot of people might not understand is sometimes infants are on special formula, they call it. So it's a prescription-based formula. And that's not sold in your local grocery stores or stocked on the shelves. So through the WIC program, that prescription is sent if you qualify, and that special formula can be picked up at the local health unit or shipped to your home in some instances. So that's a service also that's provided through our WIC offices in our local health units.
Are there other similar resources offered through the Department of Health that you feel like new moms could benefit from or should know?
So I think the other resources for new moms would be considering the services needed for your new baby. When you have your baby, they're going to do a hearing check at the hospital and they're going to do some newborn screening tests for genetic issues. That's also a program that's ran through the state health department. It's a blood spot card that comes to our public health lab, and it tests for over 30 different genetic illnesses that could affect your baby. And some of them are critical levels, meaning we have nurses that staff those newborn screening results the entire week, 7 days a week. So if they get a positive screening that would require mom to take baby immediately to the emergency room because there's something wrong, they are notified. Parents are notified. We contract with specialists, geneticists, to really read those results and make sure the accuracy of what we're telling moms. So all of that happens through the state health department. So a lot of people don't realize that. And then the infant hearing, if your baby fails their hearing test, we do follow-up hearing screenings and connect you to resources if your baby has partial or complete hearing loss and how to start navigating that journey with your new baby. Some other resources, of course, local resources around support for moms. You're probably aware when the community health worker legislation passed, we also had a doula piece of legislation. So doulas are kind of new to our state, but there are doula services out there if you need that extra emotional or just support. Breastfeeding peer groups, you can join to just join in that journey with other moms like you that are trying to succeed in this new area of life with your baby, your new baby, what to do, what to, you know, how should I take care of them? Parenting classes, so through the Baby and Me program, it's a series of parenting classes, and you are awarded like incentives for completing the different parenting classes that they offer. Mm-hmm. And that's offered in some of our counties in the state. And we have other programs like Be Well Baby. Mm-hmm. If you yourself or you're in the home with a smoker, you can call the Be Well Baby hotline or Be Well Arkansas. Some of you may have heard of that. And get resources to help stop smoking. And again, that comes with diaper and wipe and incentives to encourage you along that journey. So there's a number of programs around supporting moms and babies, home visiting programs that go up until preschool age for children to help you give your child the best start in life that you possibly can.
There's so much to know, and there's so much you don't know when you have a baby. So these support networks and the resources that are available through the Department of Health are so important.
You know, that's why we're there. And sometimes we can't forget the birthing journey is very large and demanding and lots of resources, but you also have the postpartum side. So I would encourage moms to, while they're focused on their baby and they really make sure that the baby goes for all of their visits right after birth, mom, don't forget you. Make sure and complete that postpartum visit. You can complete a postpartum visit at your local health unit as well. If you bring baby in for WIC, mom can schedule a postpartum visit alongside to get it knocked out. And the postpartum mental health resources, that will be kind of the next steps that we're starting to look at for Arkansas moms. We have connections to postpartum mental health services, but we really want to expand that education and make sure mom has that benefit.
Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you as always.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast. In our next episode, we'll move on to the sixth phase along the birthing journey, depression screening. Dr. Erin Jefferson with the UAMS Women's Mental Health Program in Northwest Arkansas will talk about the mental health challenges some moms face and resources available to help. We'll speak with Dr. Tamara Glover about the importance of postpartum depression screening for new moms. And analysts Sarah Crawford and Izzy Montgomery with the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement will share their insights from their analyses of maternal behavioral health data. I hope you'll join us. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The Healthy Birthing Journey podcast is produced by Joshua Cook at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. You can find more episodes, our infographic outlining the 9 points on a healthy birthing journey, and more analyses of maternal and infant health data in our state on our website, achi.net. Thank you for listening.